It is 5 minutes to two on April 16, 2016. With me today are Representative Tilton, Representative Hughes, Representative Keto, myself, Chair Olson. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off your cell phones. We have one item on the calendar today, House Bill 374. To present the bill is Lori Wanghire, Director of the Division of Insurance, and we've been joined by Representative Ledoux and Representative Culver. And you guys haven't missed anything. We just started.
Sorry, I'm late.
Members have a CS in their packets. Can I have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move CSHB 374-29-GH2126 / H.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Lori, please join us. Director Wanghire.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. You have before you the CS. For the record, my name is Lori Wanghire. I'm the director of the Division of Insurance for the State of Alaska. Before you, you have the CS for House Bill 374, which is an act relating to the funding for the reinsurance program. As you all know, the individual market for health care is in somewhat of a crisis. You could say it is in a death spiral. We're down to two insurers. One is severely financially stressed. We took them off the exchange earlier this year. We suspended their certificate of authority. Both of the insurers, Moda and Primera, have suffered significant losses. We have been concerned for over a year that we could lose one, if not both, of our insurers. It has happened in not states, but certainly in certain counties within states where insurers have left. It has also happened that insurers have left the state itself. And I want to clarify, when I said they've left counties, leaving certain counties bare or boroughs within certain states where there is no insurer. Those individuals are just unable to get insurance. We have seen Assurant and Aetna withdraw from the individual market in the last 12 months in Alaska. Assurant pulled out nationwide. United Healthcare is beginning to, slowly but surely. Other states are also facing this issue, but not to the extent that Alaska is. This bill was originally submitted as 374, but you have before you the CS. The largest change to this bill, if I may, is the funding. Rather than an assessment made back to consumers or to the insurers, this is taking basically
self-insurers.
Pardon?
And self-insurers.
And self-insurers, correct. This is taking the premium tax that the state collects on all insurance, which is generally 2.7%. There is some variation for marine, some life insurance policies, and some health insurance, but generally, as a rule, it is 2.7% and equates to up to $60-some million per year as premium tax, and would give you the authority to appropriate it to fund this reinsurance program. That is what this bill is doing. Everyone in the state of Alaska, it would be hard to find, is not touched by insurance or pay this tax. Auto insurance, homeowners insurance, commercial insurance, medical insurance, life insurance. It would be hard to find a more equitable way to distribute this cost, because it would be hard to find someone that is not purchasing at least one product. Everyone you know probably has a car, a motorcycle, a boat, an airplane, a business, medical insurance, life insurance, title insurance, a bond that they have not paid this 2.7% on.
Representative the bill.
Okay, so we're already collecting the 2.74%, right?
Through the chair, Representative Ludy, 2.7%. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so if we put it into this, that means it's not being used for something else. It's just sort of money that's being shuffled from one place to another place.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux. Yes, ma'am, that is correct.
So I guess I'm kind of wondering, I mean, the reason for a CHIA is for people who can't get their own insurance because they've been denied. And so since under the Affordable Care Act that you can't deny insurance to anybody, why, I don't really understand why the state needs a CHIA anymore.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, admittedly, we still have a few people left in CHIA who are buying medical insurance. We have probably not been as strict to force them into the health care. There are a handful left. The largest amount that are left in a CHIA are those buying med sup or prescription drugs that cannot afford them or cannot get them because we do not have a market for them in the state of Alaska. And for that reason, we have not deactivated the program.
Follow?
So what would happen to these people if they were under the Affordable Care Act?
Through the chair, the medical or the med sup?
Well, basically to their insurance. I mean, what would happen to them?
Through the chair, Representative Liu, if you're talking about the people that would be under the CS for HB 374, it would be seamless. They would still purchase their insurance today through Moda or Primera.
Under the ACHIA.
They would be insured through Primera or Moda. Behind the scenes, Primera and Moda would cede the claims to ACHIA, where the claims would be administered, again, behind the scenes. They would not know it. The claims and the premium would go to ACHIA. But you or I would still think we're insured with Primera or Moda.
Follow.
So how many people are we talking about, and how much is this actually going to cost? Because, I mean, it is just shifting the money. So, I mean, there is, I don't know whether there's a fiscal note attached to it, but, I mean, if it was money that was once going into the general fund and it's not going into the general fund anymore, it's kind of going here. I mean, that costs something. So I just want to know how many people are actually impacted by this thing.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, if you're talking the number in the individual market, we're talking about 23,000 people. If you're talking the number of people that are doing the high risk, that are generating the claim dollars,
yes,
we're probably talking somewhere, my guess is, because I know the claim dollar cost, but we're probably talking somewhere around maybe 300 people of the 23,000.
And so,
and again, that's my guess,
follow up,
but it's a handful.
So, and I'm just wondering how much then this cost the state for those 300 people.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, it would be up to the legislature to determine how much they're going to appropriate to make a meaningful difference to stabilize the market at somewhere between 15%. It would be up about $55 million would need to be appropriated.
$55 million for 300 people?
Again, through the chair, I don't have the number of claimants, but I know it's a handful. It's a small number of the 23,000 that are generating the claims that are causing this pool to basically be so upside down in the premium we're collecting versus what we're paying out.
Representative Tolbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So only those in the high-risk pool would be reinsured through the ACHIA mechanism, as you described, that background, that if it was 300 people that are causing this overrun of $55 million.
Through the chair, Representative Culver, I want to be clear that I'm guessing at 300. I know it's a small percent, but yes, it would just be what we did was we did a data call of the insurers,
mm-hmm.
Primera, Moda, and Assurant. Back the end of last year in November, we had them submit their data. We took that data and submitted it to an independent actuary. Of that, we had them arrange the claims in hierarchy condition, the top 10 class codes that were generating, or claim codes that were generating the most money, then the top 20, the top 30, and the top 40, to see what conditions from hemophilia to leukemia to what cancers, to anything, end-stage renal disease, to whatever you could think of, what was causing the most money. And from that, we were, did our breaking points at 10, 20, 30, and 40, just to draw a line to say, if we took these 10 subsets out, how much money would that be removing the pool? The top 10 was about $25 million. Then you went down to 20. How much was that we were taking out of the pool? The top 30, how much was that we're taking out of the pool? Just to see where the breaking points were, that if we came to the legislature and said we needed a reinsurance pool, and what would the impact be to the individual market? Okay. And to get to 15 to 18% stabilization factor, not necessarily a rate reduction, because that's an important point. This is a rate reduction. This is what we're expecting the rates not to go up this coming year. We would need approximately $55 million in a reinsurance fund.
Okay, so without this, is
follow up or new question?
Yeah, kind of a follow-up, but it's on this, what would happen to the individual market. It's the same line of questioning that Representative Ledoux was on. So without us taking, we're in triage mode right now for the individual policyholders in Alaska, 23,000 people. If we don't find a solution for this, they may be paying already $20,000 to $30,000 a year for their policy, which could increase as much as 50% or a huge amount.
Through the chair, Representative Culver, and quite honestly,
or we lose their insurance.
My concern is going from caring about rate increases to keep caring about, do we have an insurance market at all?
Okay.
Because my concern is I will be coming to you and saying I need $400 million to stand up an insurance company.
Okay. So, follow up, Mr. Chair, is it your opinion that
is correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
So, for the record, it's your opinion that our individual policies in Alaska through Affordable Health Care Act would collapse without us taking some action here?
Through the chair, Mr. Representative Culver, that is exactly why I'm here, sir.
Representative Liddell, followed by Representative Hughes.
So, if a TIA were eliminated, what would this do to the individual health care market?
Through the chair, if a CHIA were eliminated, a CHIA right now is, it has a few remaining people for whatever reason have elected to still pay the premiums of a CHIA, and it is insuring a number of individuals who are unable to get prescription coverage anywhere else in the state. There is not a market for their prescriptions because they are very high-risk drugs. And there is, why we have some med supps policies in the state, for these particular drugs, there is not a market except for a CHIA. So those individuals in particular for the med sup would but be unable to afford their drugs. They would have to pay for them out of pocket. The people that are getting major medical could go to the Affordable Care Act.
Follow up?
So what would happen if you made the people who are getting major medical go to the Affordable Care Act, and then you just did this for the drug supplement people? I mean, it just seems like an awful lot of money for a relatively few people.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I think we're starting to confuse the existing ACHIA and this. The existing ACHIA is what I'm talking about for the med sup and just a handful of people who are still purchasing their medical sup right now today, instead of their major medical from a CHIA rather than buy it from the Affordable Care Act. Right now we're talking about people who would, this 23,000 people, of which a handful are very sick and causing the claims to be very skewed. And thus we would just cede the claims, which would be seamless to them, to this reinsurance pool, which we would run basically through the authority of a CHIA.
Follow up?
I guess what I'm saying is, wouldn't it make more sense to cede those people to the Affordable Care Act and maybe keep a CHIA just for the medical sup, because the people can get the major medical through the Affordable Claims Act?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, those people can certainly go to the Affordable Care Act. They will add to the cost, and they would go back in this reinsurance pool to a CHIA, which is what we're trying to accomplish through this bill, because they would qualify for the conditions in the hierarchy of conditions that we qualified or quantified under the study done by the actuaries. They would end right up back to ACHEA.
Okay.
Representative Hughes, followed by Representative Kito.
Yeah, I thought I had it figured out, but now just to make sure that you have in the private insured market, you have some very sick people, sadly, and very high costs, and those are impacting rates because it's a pretty limited market. So you want this reinsurance pool for those that are already kind of in the Affordable Care Act private insurance market, and you want to be able to have this reinsurance pool to help stabilize the rates for everyone. Is that a correct summary? And to keep the private insurance companies here in our market, is that kind of why you say we need to do this?
To the Chair, Representative Hughes, yes, that is.
Okay, so I think we were getting kind of confused about the people perhaps who couldn't get their meds through a regular company. I just was wondering, because I know there were some opposition letters, there were some folks concerned that it might make costs go up. There was also something regarding, I can't remember, but can you address how the CS takes care of that, or does it take care of those concerns?
Through the Chair, Representative Hughes, currently ACHEA is funded through an assessment that is made to the insurance companies. How it works is ACHEA operates for a year. They incur their claims. The division then goes back to 84 insurance companies and says, we collected $1 billion of premium, and of that you wrote 20%. Therefore, you owe us 20% of ACHEA, what the assessment was. And they submit a check to ACHEA to pay for those losses. That's basically how it works.
Mm-hmm.
We thought that in this bill, or the previous bill, that perhaps we could change the allocation, because if you were an insurance company with an insurer that wrote 1% as opposed to 40%, if the allocation were passed back onto you, obviously there would be a larger portion to an insurer that was paying 40% as opposed to 1%. Our attempt was not to upset the entire population of Alaska, but to find a means so that everybody was paying the same. And in doing so, we looked at trying to distribute it equally to all and not based on an insurance company's premium allocation. We then also looked at what programs were ceding or were stopping from the federal reinsurance and a tax that was sunsetting, and tried to equate it to that, which in the last few hours, working with stop-loss carriers and the AG's office, was determined the stop-loss carriers are not paying. So it would have been a larger chunk for the stop-loss carriers to pay, a larger impact to them for self-insureds. So this bill eliminates that and takes it from the premium tax that all are paying and distributes it that way.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Kito.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So basically what we're trying to do, and I think it's just kind of follow up or a restatement of what Representative Hughes indicated, is it's trying to spread the risk of the high-risk components or the high-risk individuals so that the smaller pool that we have covered by Affordable Care Act is not adversely impacted by these excessive charges. Is that correct?
Through the Chair, Representative Kito, that is exactly what we're trying to do.
Okay, thank you.
So, Lori, are we operating underneath a waiver? Are we operating under a waiver?
Mr. Chairman, no. That is the last thing that the bill does. It is giving the director authority to apply for an innovation waiver. And under the innovation waiver, it's a long process. It'll take us a matter of months, if not a year, to apply to CMS, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid. It would be a very public process to see if the individual mandates, the employer mandate, various parts of the network adequacy, the things that we struggle with in Alaska, if perhaps we could do those better as a state regulated program as opposed to a federally run program. Right now, we're handcuffed to the Affordable Care Act. The Section 1332 waiver allows the state to apply for a waiver, but we have to show what we would do, but there are criteria, or guardrails as they call them. In return for that, we get, I think it's 97% or 95% of the federal tax credits that are being paid as premium subsidies to apply to our program. They would have to go to the consumers, obviously, as they should. But we can increase the federal deficit. The waiver's for 5 years. I mean, it does, there's criteria for the waiver, but we would like to at least explore it and apply for one to see what we could do. I'm not saying we would go forward, but to even start the process, we need legislative authority to apply.
Two-part question. If we don't do it, are we going to be forced into opening up a exchange or being responsible for an exchange?
Through the chair, no, there is nothing to say we're going to be responsible for an exchange one way or the other. This, in going for a waiver, does not require us to be responsible for an exchange. In going for a waiver, if we stayed with the exchange, quite honestly, then we would be somewhat tied to the exchange. I mean, we couldn't go too far from what they require. But there's nothing to say we have to stay with the exchange. It would be part of our fiscal analysis.
Representative Culver.
Yeah, Lori, I don't. This Affordable Care Act is such a complicated piece of legislation, but I think perhaps we found a major flaw in the act that small states, the result of all the conditions that everybody has to be insured, pre-existing conditions, small states are suffering. If Congress would have said that in the event that, you know, rates are disproportional among states, that we would have an area-wide, perhaps Montana, Washington, Oregon, Alaska, where they would spread that pool out, and then we would have carriers obligated to spread that risk out, we wouldn't have this problem. But is this no thought, nothing in the Affordable Care Act that provided for larger pools so that smaller states didn't run into this problem? I mean, cause this seems like a major flaw in the structure of that mandatory insurance act.
Through the chair, Representative Culver, I don't know if you'd call it a flaw in the Affordable Care Act because there's regulation that does not allow us to sell across state lines. There's been talk of a compact amongst the states for health care insurance. We can hope that someday it comes. I mean, something's got to change.
Right, but follow up, Mr. Chair. So if Congress would have said this is in the interest of the United States of America that small states aren't treated, you know, disproportionately unfair with these mandates coming from the act, as we see, because I'm sure if we lived in Washington or California, states that have large populations, they would look at our policies and what we pay for these individual policies. People would just be outraged.
Through the chair, Representative Culver, a quick example. We were running some numbers. A married couple in their late 50s, early 60s, with an income of $80,000, which is not unrealistic. It's in our projection for 2017 rates, will pay $40,000 under the Affordable Care Act with the current rate structure. That's where we're at.
Half of their income, the gross
yes,
income?
Yes,
sir. Bankrupt.
Representative Ledoux.
So are these rules that say you can't buy insurance across state lines, is this federal law or is this state law?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, that's federal law.
Just one follow-up?
No, certainly.
Is it all insurance or is it just health insurance?
Through the chair, it's all insurance, Representative Ledoux.
Please continue.
The bill is important to Alaskans. We can argue both sides. We can argue if we like the Affordable Care Act. We can argue should we support this or not. But the bottom line is we've got 23,000 Alaskans that are not going to have health insurance. The bottom line is if we don't do something about health insurance, if we don't do something about the cost of health care, we're not going to jumpstart this economy. The cost of uncompensated care is going to impact all of us when we go see our doctor, when we go to the hospital. This is just a start of something we have to do, something that should be addressed seriously. And we ask for your support in getting this bill out of committee.
So again, this would slow down, hopefully, the increases on all the policies, not just
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
The ones within the pool. Representative Ledoux.
I just have one more follow-up on that line of questioning. So if somebody's been living in, let's say, Oregon, and they move to Alaska, do they cancel their health care policy, or can they just continue paying their premiums?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, they have to buy their insurance here because they'd be a resident of the state of Alaska.
Representative Culver.
No. The dividend's not going to make up that.
Representative Kito.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I guess it's kind of a stop-loss for state. I'm trying to understand this, the insurance situation, and I have asked questions about whether or not we can expand the pools to other states, and it is something that has been experienced by a lot of smaller states, and the problem is we don't have enough people signing up because we just have a small population to be able to amortize those costs over a large enough pool. So when we have situations like the small number of individuals with significant amounts of health care issues, then it skews the costs of health care for that overall pool. And I know it's a big issue, and I think this is just a way to try and make sure that there are still opportunities for insurers to be able to provide products in our state. I don't think this is an ultimate solution, but it's a way to create an opportunity to keep things going for a little while longer until hopefully we can find a bigger solution. So thank you.
And again, if Laura can give us a brief walkthrough of all three sections, it'll become a little more clear. Because ultimately we're driving the train.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. Section 1, this is Section 1 that just allows you as a legislature to appropriate an amount to be determined to fund the reinsurance program. Section 55, as it says, that is the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Act. So that would allow you to fund an amount to be determined that would then go into the reinsurance market to state what we're hoping to stabilize the individual market. Section 2 would be giving the director of the Division of Insurance the authority to apply for the waiver, the innovation waiver, the Section 1332 waiver, and Section 3 allows for the effective date.
So basically, we're involved in the process all the way through. I can't think of too many places that we have that ability once the money is committed. But Representative Culver.
Yeah, just a point of order, Mr. Chairman. So we have a possible amendment to Section 3 to add a definition as well to the CS.
Actually, what we're trying to do is get the bill out today, and that section will be added to finance.
Okay.
If you'd like, I can tell you what the amendment does. The amendment, if adopted, under the Affordable Care Act, we have to allow for guaranteed issue. And currently, a CHIA, the definition of high risk, only allows for certain diseases or medical conditions. And an Affordable Care Act allows its guaranteed issue. That's what the definition is doing, is just correcting it that anyone be eligible for health care. That's all.
Representative Ledoux.
Yeah, nope. I'm fine.
I'm good.
Representative Tolton. Representative Hughes. Representative Kito. I'll remove my objection to adopting the CS. Is there any further opposition to the CS? With that, I think we'll open up public testimony. We have a few people signed up. First off, anybody in the room that wants to add at least one union member would be nice, or union representative. Don or Barbara? Let's see who's been bad lately.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my testimony will be very brief today. For the record, my name is Barbara Huff-Teknas. I'm Director of Governmental and Legislative Affairs for Teamsters Local 959. And on behalf of our organization, and I'm thinking the folks behind me as well.
There's several people putting thumbs up if you want to turn around.
We would like to go on record supporting the CS for House Bill 374. And I'm not going to take up the committee members' time and a lot of frustrations that we have as multi-employer union plans out there under ACA. It's very, very frustrating. It's very complicated. in our negotiations with our employers. The money's coming in. I mean, it's a lot of very, very huge issues that, unfortunately, we have to deal with as well. So I would echo some of Representative Culver's remarks regarding ACA. It's been very, very frustrating for a lot of us. The Cadillac tax is a huge issue, and for us, it's all about now having to downgrade our benefit plans for our members, and it's counterintuitive when you look at benefits that are supposed to protect the people that work for a living. So anyway, with that...
Will you take a question?
I will take a question.
What would the original version of the bill done to your organization?
What was that?
The first version of this bill.
For our plan would have cost our Teamster employer health and welfare plan over $1.2 million. So we're very pleased with the CS.
Any further questions? Thanks again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there anybody else in the room that may not be a union representative that would care to comment on it? Seeing none, we'll go off net. Chuck Dunningham, please state your name and affiliation for the record and give us your comments.
Thank you. My comments were with respect to an earlier version of 374. I have nothing to add at this time. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Dave Jones, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Good afternoon, Chairman Olson and members of the committee. My name is Dave Jones. I'm the assistant superintendent for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, and I'm the plan administrator for our self-funded health care plan. Yesterday, I submitted a letter in opposition to House Bill 374 because it would have added significant cost to our self-funded health care plan and it would not have provided any benefits to our members. Committee substitute addresses my stated concerns, and with the changes, I would support the CS. I want to recognize this committee for listening and responding to our concerns, and thank you. So thank you very much.
Dave, did you pencil out what it would have cost the school district under the first version?
Yeah, the first version would have cost us $861,648 approximately.
Yeah. Thanks again, Dave.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you.
See you soon. Greg Landon. Not available. Is there anybody else online that would care to testify? With that, we will take a brief of these. Still a D's. On the record, Representative Culver.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just for the record to, you know, leave a good record here that as proposed and originally in the draft that came over from the Senate, well, it was the Senate version, but this is House Bill 374.
Right.
Would have affected all self-insured plans as well as these plans we've been indicated that some labor organizations have. So effectively, most school districts, municipalities, state of Alaska,
I think the state's exempt.
Well, of course, they always exempt themselves from anything bad. But
I guess we're 40%.
But it would have affected every community in Alaska. And, you know, just an example raised by the Kenai District Kenai Borough School District, they said it was an impact with no benefit in health care benefits to their employees, but a cost of $232 per employee. So that is a lot of inflation to add to an already out of control healthcare market. And so I think we're acting in the interest of Alaskans to go to this version.
Letters from municipalities, boroughs, schools.
Yeah, I'm tooling through them a little bit here.
And that's why we tried to find a different direction that would be more accurate.
I just want to thank the department for working with us on getting us to this point.
Laurie, can you tell us about the fiscal note?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, again, my name is Laurie Wing-Heyer. I'm the Director of the Division of Insurance for the State of Alaska. The fiscal note for the CS will remain to be zero as respects the division of insurance. It will not change our operating. However, the revenues will be indeterminate based on the what is appropriated from the legislature for this program.
I think what Lori is saying is she has no control over the appropriation because the legislature will be setting it. Mm-hmm. Is that materially correct? Any further questions for Lori? Anybody in the room or online that has not had a chance to testify? Seeing none, we will close out public testimony. Committee discussion. Thanks, Lori.
Thank you.
What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move CSHB 374-29-GH-2126/H with individual recommendations and pending fiscal note.
Seeing no opposition, this bill will move on to finance. And with that, I will recess the committee. And thanks again for everybody coming on short notice.
Call the chair.